Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 43. I'm Michelle Malloy Dillon.
And I'm Janice Cumming. And Michelle, we're excited to have our good friend with us today. Juniper Lo Salento is with us. And Juniper is the Senior Director of Development at the YMCA of Greater Toronto. She's also Vice President of Public Affairs for the AFP chapter here in Toronto. And she's an instructor in the Fundraising Management Program at Ryerson University. So welcome, Juniper.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and we were just, we were kind of laughing. I was saying to Juniper, like, how did we meet? Because I can't remember not knowing you. But we did, we think we met at a networking event, and what we had in common was we had both worked at the same consulting firm, but we worked there at different times. So that was, I think, what sparked our conversation and getting to know each other. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So welcome, Juniper. Yeah, we're happy to have you here today.
And, thanks very much, Michelle.
You're welcome. And, in your blog post, you talk a lot about your passion for philanthropy. And I thought that might be a good place for us to begin. Like, what were the origins of this passion for philanthropy?
Well, so I'm going to repeat a tiny bit of what I said in my blog post, but I'll sort of expound on that. Because I literally remember the first time that I heard this word, philanthropy. I don't think I'd ever heard it before. I was a teenager. And I was in the car listening to a radio program, and they were actually talking about the precursor to Imagine Canada. I think it was called the Center for Canadian Philanthropy. And they were talking about the work of this organization. And of course, I didn't know fundraising was a career, and I thought, I want to be a philanthropist. And I just thought, how much money can I give away? And I had like a minimum wage job, but I was really inspired just by this idea of doing good. And to me, philanthropy still stands for doing good. And there's a purity to it that I believe in. And that's what really makes it a core cause for me. You know, a lot of times when people find out that I'm a fundraiser, they say, oh, my God, I could never ask for money. And I actually, this sort of sounds kind of hokey, but I think of it as creating opportunities for people to act on their values through giving. I really do. I think about it that way in my own context as a donor, and I think about that as my job as a fundraiser. So I'm a facilitator of those acts of philanthropy, and I didn't know back then that that was a thing one could do professionally, but it fits really well with the values that I have and that desire to make change and make positive change. And so for me, I find it really empowering to be able to bring about more good in the world. And that's what it means to me. And that's why I want to do more of it.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And I love, I think we know so many fundraisers who have this passion, right? And I think it's like sometimes people have a passion for a cause, and there are people, I think, especially when I worked in consulting, I noticed there are also people who sort of have more of a passion for the sector. And yet what I love about you, Juniper, is like you also then think deeply about like what are the issues in our sector? You know, you've sort of taken your passion and put your critical eye to it. So you unpack some of those in the blog post, but give us a sense of what you see as some of the core issues that we're facing right now.
Sure. And I mean, it goes back to this idea that I want to believe that philanthropy is good. And I think there's lots of evidence that shows that it's good, but that doesn't mean that there aren't issues that need to be addressed. So I think some of the issues, certainly at the broad scale, there are some who think that the traditional model of charity is broken and that it's actually not working and that there isn't enough demonstrable evidence that all of the resources put into charitable work are doing the good and making the changes that we need to see. So there's this parallel of philanthrocapitalism, for example, this idea that you're using market forces to create social change. There's effective altruism of, are you really doing enough good with your money? And I think that those of us who continue to work in the quote traditional charity sphere need to look at those other models and think about what we can learn from them, as opposed to just saying, oh no, we're just going to do things business as usual. So for example, the idea of being able to measure and demonstrate your impact it's not an easy thing. There's no question about that. But I think it's quite important for charities to be able to get a handle on that, not only because they need to be able to tell that story to donors, but because they need to know that they're actually moving the needle on the issues that they're committed to working on. So I think that's something that maybe we've learned a little bit from some of those other some of those newer modes that we can do a little bit better in that area. I think also there's a bit of a hypocrisy in the idea that the market can fix problems that the market created. So for example, we know that there are a lot of challenges both locally and globally with equality, but that is as a result of capitalism. So then what should the role of capitalism be in closing those equality gaps when capitalism caused those problems in the first place? So again, I think we have to be somewhat critical about those things. And I can't listen to those criticisms and just be like, oh, I'm just going to go out and get some money from donors and love them and make them feel really good. I actually have to, as you say, Janice, approach that with a bit of a critical eye and think about what am I facilitating, not only good through the work that I do, but also perhaps things that are maybe a little bit less than good in some cases. Am I helping to change the status quo in a meaningful way, or am I maintaining the status quo inadvertently?
So what has led you to grapple with these hard questions about the role of philanthropy and the role that fundraisers play, Juniper?
I think there's a few different things. I definitely think the changes that we've seen in the world, in society over the last 5-10 years, let's say post 2008 crash, and that widening opportunity gap, that's something that I've become a lot more attuned to. I would also say that through my work at the YMCA, I've been here just about 4 years, I've had the opportunity to think a lot more about equity and equality and thinking about what is my role as somebody with a relative amount of power. You know, what responsibility do I have to share that power? How do I share that power with people? How do I help to break down power structures that are detrimental to some people? So some of those different pieces. And you know, what has led me to think about that? Well, a big turning point that Janice knows about is that I took a big plunge and went back to school in midlife, and about this time last year finished a master's degree in philanthropy and nonprofit leadership. And I think it's fair to say that I went into the program thinking, oh yes, philanthropy is all good, everything's rosy, and definitely came out with a more critical and more nuanced view. Absolutely, philanthropy is still good, but it's important to see the kind of the underside of it, and the work that I did and the critical thinking that I was able to do in the academic context really helped me to do that and challenged me to do that. I remember there's one assignment that I had, you know, it was some kind of like reading and you had to summarize and you had to say what you thought about, nothing that complicated. And it was early in the semester and I got it back and I got a poor grade on it. And my professor said to me, well, you didn't tell me what you thought about it. And so it really forced me to take that leap and to not just regurgitate information, but actually form critical opinions and share them persuasively. And so for me, the rigor of that program was really valuable in terms of kind of moving forward my own thinking. And then I've really tried to take those principles forward. I'm very involved with the Association of Fundraising Professionals, both at the chapter level, the board level, and the national level in Canada. And there's a lot of opportunities there to apply that type of thinking. And also doing my own writing, you know, blogging, all those different kinds of outlets I've found to be really important, so that the work that I do on a daily basis is informed by that critical thinking.
Mm. Yeah.
You have such a passionate way of talking about putting it into action, right?
Mm.
And you talk in your blog too about fundraisers must do more. And so I'm curious if you could share some examples where you see this fundraisers do more in action.
Sure. And it's funny because I was looking back at that and I was like, well, wait a second, fundraisers are already really busy. I don't mean more like volume. So I'm going to temper that a little bit.
Right? Great. Okay.
I don't want to add like, I don't want to make it intimidating, but I think it's just about thinking of our roles in a slightly different way. So I'm going to use this example, and I'm sure people will be familiar with this, because over the course of the last few weeks, there's been a little bit of an almost mini scandal, I'd say, in the U.S. media about Jeffrey Epstein as a donor. And it came to light that a certain institution accepted gifts from him, even though they already knew of some of the things he'd been accused of, et cetera. And they went ahead and they did it anyway, right? And so to me, that's a little bit of like being part of the problem or being part of the solution. And I have no idea what the circumstances were of the people who were involved in this. But on some level, I think it's fair to say that if you're accepting gifts from somebody who's been convicted of being a sexual predator, then you're part of the problem in maintaining those power structures rather than breaking them down. And so that means we have to be able to say no to gifts. And the reality is, sometimes fundraisers don't feel like they can say no to gifts. I mean, we're all facing, speaking of doing more, tremendous pressure to meet our financial goals. And I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there, because if fundraisers are getting the message that they have to achieve their financial goals no matter what, and that their necks on the line, their jobs on the line, no matter what, well, then maybe we would all find ourselves, okay, not in that particular situation, because that's a really extreme example, but in a situation where we might say, oh yeah, I think this could be okay, or I could make it okay if I did it under these circumstances. And it's a little bit of a slippery slope. And so I think that if, and this comes to this whole idea of a different conversation about fundraising, if fundraisers were to have greater credibility internally with their colleagues, and fundraisers weren't seen as, you know, like the ATM, the cash machines, then we could afford to be more discerning and more thoughtful in the way that we act. So I think it's sort of like, it's a little chicken and egg there, but we have to be around the table as equals, saying, yes, it's my job to go out and raise money, but there are certain circumstances in which we might not accept that money, and let's have a conversation about what that is. So something really sexy like gift acceptance policies means that we actually need to be, we need to be thinking about those things. So I think above all, and this is maybe a little bit of a shift from the dominant ethos in our profession, because probably at least the last 15 years, I'd say the buzzword is donor-centered fundraising, right? Putting the donor at the center of everything, full stop. And I would argue that we've seen cases of that going too far. Jeffrey Epstein is obviously a really, really specific example. Again, in the press, we've also seen a lot about the Sacklers. And sure, they've donated millions and millions of dollars to a lot of cultural institutions. But we also know that a lot of that money came literally from the deaths of people, you know, who were addicted to opioids. So we have a role in that as fundraisers if we're accepting those gifts. And I think that's part of what we have to grapple with. And I think we have to think more. Yes, the donors are important, but we have to think about the beneficiaries, right? Who are those that are served by our work? It's not just enough to get the dollars in the door. We've got to take those dollars and make sure that good is being done with them. And that brings me back to this idea of impact and how do we know that we're having impact, right? So I'll just use a little example. At the YMCA, we invested in research last year, and we were able to demonstrate that if you are in a neighborhood with a YMCA, even if you're not a member, you actually will have greater health and well-being than neighborhoods without YMCAs. Mm. And that's a really powerful thing to be able to say to a donor, and to be able to say, that means your dollars are having an impact that we can measure and we can demonstrate. And I think that often in our sector, we're not able to take the conversation all the way to that endpoint, and we get caught just at, well, we got this money. So for me, that's a really big part of that critical lens, taking it all the way to the beneficiaries and what the impact is going to be.
Yeah, it's, I really, there's so much here, right? And I'm like processing it, but I also love how it actually really reminds me, Michelle, like you probably feel the same way. Like it's sort of in coaching, we often talk about, like, it's often not about what we're doing. It's more about like the being, right? Like it's about having a different perspective, increasing your awareness, you know, thinking about things more holistically. And so, you know, you kind of joked a few minutes ago, Juniper, but I think it's true, like there is a pressure on fundraisers. And yet, you know, what you're saying is just like simply, it's kind of like open your eyes a little bit wider, you know, take a bigger view of this whole sector.
Exactly. And, you know, and so yeah. And so, Janice, it's not necessarily do more, but maybe it's think differently.
Yeah.
And take that different perspective. And I have to give a little bit of, I know we're going to do a call to action shortly, but I do want to give a shout out to Ian McQuillan of Rogare, which is a think tank based in the UK. And I encourage all of your listeners to go check out Ian's work, because Ian is doing what he calls an analysis of critical fundraising. Mm. And so that doesn't mean I'm criticizing your major gift strategy. It means we're looking at fundraising with a critical lens and thinking about some of these issues and encouraging fundraisers, again, to apply that to their own work. So he calls it a mode of inquiry to help us rethink fundraising. Mm-hmm. And all to the point of having greater impact. And I've found a lot of that work to be really interesting and challenging, and it's helped me to think about the work that I do with that slightly different lens on it.
Yeah, and I think also, like, you know, knowing you, and one of the things that I admire is, like, you also put yourself in community and in relationship with other people where these conversations are happening. You know, you did that through your master's, you do that at AFP. So there's also a sense of, like, don't be in it alone, right? Like, fundraisers need to find like-minded people that are having these conversations and join the conversation.
Yeah, and I hear this sort of call to action too, Juniper, from you, which is like, you know, let's re-examine how we've been doing things lately. And this idea of fundraisers being taking responsibility in a different way for their fundraising actions as a way of reconnecting with that value of philanthropy that have brought so many of us into this world of fundraising, and not forgetting about that philanthropy and that value that has brought us here to begin with and the benefit of what the money can bring in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Janice, just to go back to something that you said, it reminded me of some conversations you and I have had in the past about curiosity and how important, and certainly this is something that helped me a lot in those early days of my master's program, where I sat in a room with 25 people who ranged in age from 22 to 60 plus, who had a really, really, you know, wide diversity of experiences, and absolutely throws you totally off kilter in terms of trying to figure out how you fit in and what you have to bring to the table. And I went to that table, you know, with curiosity and of this, you know, just kind of that beginner's mind of, sure, I've had some experiences and I know some things, but I'm actually here to learn, not just from the professors and the curriculum, but from the people around me. And that was such an enriching experience. And I agree that there are a lot of people who are hungering for those conversations. And for those who feel like the professional path is just raise more money, raise more money, raise more money, I would say it doesn't need to be that. And I think that that may lead to disillusionment and burnout, which we know happens in our field. But when you can actually engage intellectually and think through some of these challenges and find where you are in these challenges in relation to your own values, then I think fundraising can bring you a great deal of personal satisfaction that might not come otherwise. And so I do think that it is worth that type of examination and that type of curiosity.
Yeah. So as you alluded to earlier, we like to give people something to try to bring this in, you know, into action. So I know you pointed to some readings. So maybe, you know, we'll link to the blog post so people can look them up as well. But just give us a sense of, like, why you picked what you picked and what you hope people can get out of doing a little bit more of a deeper dive into this topic.
Sure. So I think what I'll say, and of course you can see it all on the blog, is there are a couple of pieces that I had the opportunity to be involved with through AFP. One is called Asking Matters, and the other one is called Fundraising is Awesome. And both of them are in the vein of changing the conversation about fundraising to being something that is more asset-based. Many of us have heard from, you know, friends, family, people we know, colleagues, oh my goodness, I couldn't do that, fundraising is so terrible. Well, actually, those of us who've been working on this, we have a different opinion. We actually think fundraising is awesome. you know, we were half joking when we came up with that title, but it really stuck. And somebody said to me, this is the first time I've ever heard anybody talk about fundraising in a positive way, which was very shocking to me.
Yes.
but this, it's this idea of how we can talk about the work that we do and demonstrate the impact that we have using positive language rather than what we've perhaps historically done, which is a little bit defensive and a little bit sort of justificatory and all that kind of thing. So I would suggest you can just Google these. They're both AFP publications. One is Asking Matters. The other is Fundraising is Awesome. And since we're talking about AFP, I'll just also say that the day we're recording this, which is October 1st, AFP Global is kicking off the first ever Ethics Month. People may know that AFP as a professional association has the only enforceable code of ethics in the fundraising profession. And most of the time, I think we think that ethics is this ridiculously boring, oh my God, I only have to think about it once in a while if somebody asks me if I would, you know, I don't know, accept used toys or whatever. But actually, it underpins every single thing that we do. And I'm really excited to see what AFP Global is sort of bringing out over the course of the next month. So if you don't already subscribe to the daily emails, I encourage you to do that. And you can follow along with that conversation. It relates to so many of the things we've talked about today, the scandals that I mentioned, and changing the way that fundraising is understood in the public sphere. All of that is grounded in the work that we do on an ethical basis every single day. And I think we can always brush up on that. So I'm actually pretty excited about what the next month is going to bring in that regard. And hopefully other people will find something there that they can engage with as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I want to thank you again for, you know, writing a piece for us and coming on to talking to us, because it does feel like this new conversation is needed. And I know Michelle and I were excited to talk to you about this. And let's keep the conversation going. You know, people can comment on the blog post after they've read it and share also, like, what are they thinking about? What kind of resources are they turning to? So thank you, Juniper. I love talking to you all the time, but this is our first time getting to talk to each other, you know, on a podcast. So thanks for being our guest today.
Thanks very much, Janice and Michelle.
All right. Thank you, Juniper. Now, I'd like to remind our listeners that if you haven't subscribed to our podcast already, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Now go put it into practice. Curiosity.